Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld, and this program is an exploration into an unfolding consciousness that's emerging on the planet and to human beings and to an evolution in being that we are coming to as a civilization, as a planetary civilization. And tonight's guests are very much a part of this evolution. And my first two guests have written a book called Awaken Perfection. They are Phil Bergine and Adrone Whippich. Is that what you said?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Now, I've seen your book. It's a beautiful book. And you have the idea that really everything is perfect in each moment just as it is, and there's no need to complain about anything. Is that true?
Well, that's one way to describe it. But I think, you know, if when we describe perfection, I think what's important is to understand what perfection is not. And it is not something that we need to reach for or strive for. It is not a final destination or a final goal. So you might say, okay, so what is it? So perfection is an experience. The word is, it's an experience that is available to any of us at any time and anywhere.
Wait, so let me just absorb that. So you're saying perfection is this moment. I mean, it's not just, it's how everything is. You're saying perfection is now in this moment.
Yes. So the secret to experiencing perfection is in your ability to totally surrender to this moment.
But can things always be a little better?
Absolutely, they can. But see, as soon as we let go of our mind, which, you know, and our thoughts, which are always, infusing contradiction and paradox. I mean, that is the trick. So, you know, perfection is that, you know, again, you have to think about experience, that peak experience. And I know, Alan, you've experienced it, Phil, myself, and we want to live in that experience more often. And when we speak of that experience, what is it? So it's that peak experience where things are in the flow and you feel whole, happy, and complete. And, you know, when you think about it, experience, at least in this lifetime, in this reality, is all that matters.
Right. That's why we're here for. We're here for experience.
Yes.
So how do we achieve that peak experience? And everything, it seems, less than that is, in a way, less than perfect. I mean, not that that's more for, but there is something in a peak experience, like, boom, the whole universe comes together.
Yes.
Go ahead, Phil. Yes.
Yeah. There's two types of, I would say, of kind of realizing it. One is in the moment where you experience the immediate moment to be perfect just as it is. The other is if you step back and view the entire panorama of history or consciousness or whatever this play that we're living in is all about, and you suddenly see that it's all, everything that ever happened had to happen to bring us to this opportune moment. And so you, this was the tougher part. We'll maybe go in a little bit later that we arrived at the book. It's a little easier to understand that at this very moment, if you stop your monkey mind from evaluating and judging, then things are the way they are and that they can be experienced as perfect.
Right. I get that. So let's start in an easy, accessible way for people listening. So, Adrone, you on your video, you talk about the three steps, I think, that you were saying.
Probably four.
Four, man. Okay, four. Okay, it wasn't perfect, okay? So
that's perfect that you know it's not perfect and you laugh about it. See, that's perfect.
That's perfect that I know it's not perfect, and so there makes four makes it perfect. Perfect.
Absolutely, because at the end of the day, you laugh at it, and so that's your final experience, and you have to focus on your experience, because that's all that matters.
Actually, you're right. I am coming up with a whole new thesis called the paradigm of experience, which is why we're here, why we incarnated in the first place. So then then Phil, what do you see as the steps to perfection, or the steps that, you know, the four steps as it goes?
Yeah. Well, in essence, it's the willingness to let go that you're not already perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm echoing Ramana Maharshi on that one.
Right.
But essentially, there's absolutely nothing you have to do to experience perfection, and your efforts will definitely be in the way of a direct experience of perfection. It's a phenomenon that's literally moment by moment. And, you know, it's sort of the more you hang on to it, the more it goes away. In other words, it's sort of like surfing, you know, where you go wave by wave and enjoy the ride. But when the ride is over, then you start over again. And the moment you take a position around all of this, then, of course, the position is 100% in the way, and it blocks the experience of it.
Well, in a
way, so the point is to enter deeply into the present moment.
Well, in a way, of course, it's the simplest thing in the world to do. It's not easy, but it's simple, you know?
Yes.
Say. So we'll talk about your experiences and how did you two get together to write this book, and where did that come from?
So we got to, so we actually, Phil and I worked together for an international company, and it was interesting because we were thinking about, you know, our own work, but then we put our heads together and we said, okay, you know, we worked for an Indian company, and so we said, oh, look at East. East is all about wisdom, and West is all about love. And when you put the two together, you have a bomb. You have something really incredible. And so that's why we split our book into two parts. Part one is all about the mega story, which is our history. And part two is about the mega dream, which is, you know, the mystery that we all live in.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about those two parts. Yeah. Okay. So the first part you said is the
mega story. The mega story is primarily your story in this world, my story, Phil's story, everybody else's individual stories combined with a collective one big story. So what we did is we went back in time and we said, okay, let's look at the traditional age. Let's look at the modern age. Let's look at the current age, which we call, you know, the new age, the planetary age. We have to understand and let people know, answer the same question. Where do we come from? Mm-hmm. And because it's very important to understand all of these religious traditions and to understand where are we going.
Let me just ask you, is it really important to understand our history, or is it more important? I mean, of course, people want to know as a curiosity of the mind, but we're just here now.
Absolutely. But so see, that's where all of these big conversations come from. Why people argue, all the, you know, religious institutions argue with the science, and science argue with, you know, all this is happening because it's unclear, because people don't have that foundation. And so we thought, you know, with our book, we're going to look at it and we're going to look a little bit at the history on a very high level. And so what we found out, that traditional age was actually very spiritual. When you look at the modern age was very all about me, you know, I stuff my pockets and leave everybody else behind. Whereas now the planetary age is very spiritual. We're back at the very spiritual age. And so that's where, you know, we realize that, you know, the whole perfection concept at the end of the day.
But, okay, I get that. So then how do you, so then fit that perfection concept into the history we are at now.
So actually all of that, and Phil, you can go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead, Phil.
Okay, so there's two basic premises, which is that perfection is a living experience that's available to anyone at any time under any circumstances. The second one is that everything that ever happened to you and me had to happen to bring us to this exact moment in time. That there's sort of a necessity that things happen the way they happen, even though in principle we have absolute freedom, there's infinite possibility.
Right.
And so, in a sense, when you realize that nothing was really for waste, nothing really happened, really, honestly, nothing happened by chance, then we sort of, that kind of goes in with the idea that we're living a story within a great dream.
For example, the modern age was very much realistic, but it was okay because it opened up a new paradigm for us. Actually, when you look at the modern age, it allowed us to have internet. Mm-hmm. And internet is bringing the world together, which allows us to learn about new traditions and realize that every religious tradition was incomplete without each other until now.
Oh, I see, because we are really are one consciousness and one world. So, I mean, we all fit together. Some people, of course, would argue against that. They think their religious tradition is complete unto itself. But if we look at the bigger picture, it's not, because that's what I think you're calling the mystery, isn't it? The mystery of the totality.
Right, exactly. And so that's where we're into this mystic era, where, you know, our religion is mysticism primarily, and mysticism is all about perfection. So you know, when you look at the mega dream based on science or quantum physics or quantum mechanics, there's nothing really solid out there. So if there's nothing really solid out there, then we are creating our own experience. We're creating, you know, our everyday lives. And that's why, going back to the four steps, perfection, you know, how do you experience perfection is through awakening, creation, play, and celebration. Mm-hmm. We're awakening to this, you know, perfection. We're awakening to this, to ourselves. It's a process. It's not like, boom, it's done. It's a process. And we need to understand that, you know, perfection is hidden between the rubble and clutter of mistaken notions.
Mm-hmm. But Phil, then talk about what is the mystery and the mysticism and the next step. I mean, yes, once we have the first part taken care of, what is the mystery? What is mysticism to you guys? I mean,
you know, I say that, you know, you might start with the Greeks. Things are not as they appear to be. I think the Greeks were one of the early peoples to make that distinction. You have appearance and you have reality.
Right. Plato's cave, I think you talked about.
Yeah, precisely. And so in essence, there was a realization in all the great traditions, Hindu, Buddhist, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, that there is kind of an inner reality that's perhaps more real than the outer reality. One way of looking at it is that our world is on a substratum that we call God. So our world is residing on a substratum. I think Audrey and I both particularly like the Indian metaphor that it's a play, and God is playing all the roles. So God
and we're all God playing. I mean, God is playing all the roles as us.
Precisely. And so it's in essence, some people get hung up around the idea it's a game, that God is toying with us, but rather we feel the reverse, that God is actually playing with us, not against us or indifferently watching.
But what was it? What's it all for? What's the point? I mean, yes, for experience, but what's it all for? What's in incarnation?
Here's the breakthrough, I think, and this is, I think, putting the Bible, the Gita, the Quran, all of these together, is that it's celebration. It is pure and simple celebration of our source.
Oh, so that's, if everything is perfect and we have really nothing to complain about, then everything's perfect and we could celebrate that. But of course, that's easy for us to say, who are living in the West relatively, you know, calm, safe lives. But there's a lot of people out there that don't have it as well off as we do, you know?
Absolutely. Yes. You know, and so I come from a small and tiny country called Lithuania, mm-hmm. and we were for many years occupied by the Soviets. And so you know, I experienced, I got to live during pretty dark times where my, you know, grandparents, uncles were, you know, sent to Siberia, where, you know, some of them were tortured to KGB and so forth. And so, you know, but I have to say, I've lived through the time where it really opened up my eyes. Instead of hate, I developed something different. You know, once you let go, you realize you always have to look at the big picture, right? And that there's somebody's agenda behind it. So, you know, in 1990, Lithuania declared its independence. And so Russians moved in the tanks and the army, and it was a big deal. And it was really amazing how people were, you know, uniting and putting their, you know, standing around the overnight TV tower and the parliament and guarding these buildings with their bodies, you know, to protect, protect the buildings and fight for that freedom. And so that made me realize that, you know, once we have a common goal, a big goal, we unite. And so if we can have that common goal, you know, throughout nations and throughout something big to fight for, we can really move mountains. And so that's how Lithuania, you know, a tiny little country, declared its independence. But we got our independence just because we stuck to our guns, say, but nobody was really shooting from our end.
Yeah. Right. But no, I understand that. And yes, but in the perfection, I'm just saying it's easy for us to say everything's perfect, but there are people who are suffering right now. And how do we tell them it's all perfect?
Alan, could I address that?
Please, please.
So early on, this book came out of a conversation that lasted for over 5 years and was twice a week. And early on, we were kind of refining these ideas. And one of Adroni was working at the time, colleague had lost her son in the Iraq War. And somehow she couldn't get with the idea of perfection. And so it gradually, we kind of sat with that. And it, you know, sort of the whole gestalt merged to there has to be three parts. One is unity, the second is love, and the third is perfection. So essentially, we see God as absolute unity, absolute love, absolute perfection. And that this was kind of implicit in the Western tradition, the Mosaic tradition. We take the three religions, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and then the current, you know, maybe humanistic theism, however you want to say it. But there was kind of a beat, a pattern of an increasing revelation. So when you address absolute love, then you have something that can really satisfy people's hearts. You can't put a rigid idea of perfection against someone who's in agony at the moment, say. Love is the only thing that will answer that. But in a sense, when you do come out of that, you can experience it as being perfect, utterly perfect.
Right, on the other end, and that's what Adroni was saying about, you know, Lithuania and all that, and I agree, and I think, well, let's then, I mean, I get that point, and everyone has to sort of work out their own individual process in reality and in relationship to their own experience.
Exactly.
And so I think you're laying out a nice vehicle and path for people to follow to awaken to their perfection, which is in each moment.
It is. And also you have to look at it from a, you know, that every one of us is perfect at the core.
Right.
The perfect self.
Right.
So, you know,
the circumstances may not be perfect, but who we are in our infinite being is what's perfect.
Exactly. And so the gap here is, you know, so we perfect as, you know, the real self is perfect. So you are eliminating a lot of these shadows right off the bat. You know, you increase your confidence, your happiness, your freedom. because, you know, there is no more fake, the authentic self comes out, you know, and then you're able to take the world of doing and the world of being and sort of eliminate the gap between the two. Because in this world is we need the doing as much as we need the being. And, you know, through that inner world is, you know, we reflect the outer situations and everything else. And so I feel like in today, if people are either in way too far in the being or way too far in the doing and ignoring the being, and that's not how we can experience perfection to begin with.
Right. So let's then also talk where we are going as a planetary civilization in this idea of awakening to the mystery of who we are. Do you want to talk about that, Phil, a little bit?
So,
the group consciousness. Yes.
When we started this, we were both willing to accept the premise that what is out there, that I'm cause my experience, and I'm source of my experience, and I'm not the what's out there didn't do it to me.
Right.
So in other words, if you're willing to, and I would say for most of the listeners, perhaps, if you're willing to entertain it as a premise, not necessarily believing it, but entertain it as a premise, that what's out there is a reflection on somehow, then you basically can start to work with that there's kind of a meaning or a purpose that's to the entire play. We sort of liken it to a three-act play where we're right at the climax right now where the fireworks about to go off.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, if we discern a deeper meaning to this, that it's all about revelation, if you will, revelation of our ultimate source, then there's a means for hope that's beyond our own narrow human interests or our own perhaps apparently limited ability to make a difference in the big picture.
Right. Well, then let's talk about that revelation. We mentioned the beginning of that, those peak experience where we come to oneness with our source. How is that achieved? I mean, it seems like people just stumble upon it, but do you have a formula for achieving that, Jonah or Phil? Either one.
The formula is, again, to awaken, create, play, and celebrate. And I think we've covered, you know, the awaken and understand that this is a process, because perfection is something that you're always going to be going in and out of it. Mm-hmm. And so we really want to stay in more than, you know, out. And to do that, you have to understand that you are not, you are the creator, and you have to, you know, it's easier to talk when we have the images from the book in front of people, but since we don't, you know, you sort of have to be above the line. So you have to play at a much higher level. And here goes the word play. Mm-hmm. We became so serious, that we forget to play. Nobody said that, you know, since we left our childhood, that we have to become serious, and everything that we do, even to pay our bills, we have to be serious about it. We don't. If you play at work, if you play, doing your job, you know, and that's, again, it comes back to your experience. If you are able to get that experience to another level, you'll be not only a happier being, but that's the ticket to that perfection and to the core self, which is the divine self.
Right. So, Phil, explain play. I mean, I think I have an idea, but how do you explain that in work and to play and to be, you know, in that state of mind, really?
Well, you know, sort of play doesn't have an agenda typically. It's just very loose ideas. But you do it for its own sake. It's intrinsic motivation. And essentially, when you watch yourself, it's like you're doing what you're doing when you're doing it, as long as you're doing it. And you choose it, you choose to do what you're doing, then you become consciously aware of it. And at that point, you can start to dance, if you will. Mm-hmm. So play, the big hindrance, I think, and that certainly I'm a living witness of that, is the power of pretense to dampen play and humor. So it's like it's a process of lightening up and opening up that allows the spirit of play. We all knew it brilliantly as children, right? For almost every child I've met is right. A master at play. So, but essentially, I have the convictions, because I'm getting older, that we're all children. At whatever age we're in, we're really just children with some more heavy act than the others.
So, but it seems like, you know, we grow up. I mean, I know we do grow up, but we grow up because we, you know, have to make a living, support other people. I mean, can we be children? I think we can, but I mean, we have to change the very structures of society. It seems like if we are going to continue to play and be children when we grow up, would you say that, Adrona?
Or, yes, yeah. I mean, it's on a totally different level play, because, you know, your play is not going to be the same as you were 5 years old. I mean, you're no longer interested in cars and dolls, whatever, right? I mean, playing on a much higher level, you're doing much bigger and greater things. So, you know, so in those terms, you become playful with the two most frightening things in human behavior, which is fear of the unknown and fear of failure, and you start playing with those two.
Right. So, all right. So, I mean, I understand that. So, but do we have to change? I mean, we have to change ourselves first. But do we have to? Doesn't the world have to change? I mean, to really embrace what you're saying, and for our world to change, we have to change basic things in our society.
Well, actually, what we're saying is you don't have to change, you don't have to fix anything, but you have to keep awakening. You have to become more aware of yourself and your inner self, your inner world. And once you become more aware of that, you will see yourself on multiple, you know, levels. You'll see your emotions, you'll understand where your thoughts are coming from, or at least you'll be able to notice. And so that's a totally different ballgame. As soon as you become conscious about it, the game is never the same.
Right. So like really, okay, I mean, I get that. And I appreciate it. And so if we were to like have people really leave this conversation with some really key tools to awaken their perfection, what would you want them to have? I mean, both of you, go ahead. You can.
I will end this with a playful note, and I will say this, that the monsters are not under the bed. They're in your head. Phil, you can take over.
Okay. Well, I think that if we're open to it, that we are the world, if we're open to that as a possibility or proposition or however you want to put it, that you'll begin to discover that that's the truth. Because I think, Alan, you were hinting at, you know, what does somebody else do to somebody else? What kind of impact can I have? There are also, and I have to go back to my own tradition, which is Christianity, that the idea of praying for your enemies, I think, has incredible validity. And I literally did that for when we were writing the book. I'm still doing it every morning. But praying for my so-called enemies, which I really don't have any, but let's say political enemies, let's say you're not enchanted with either Obama or his opposition, to pray for the person you dislike is actually an immensely liberating experience. So you go back to something that even traditional people could relate to right there. But it actually reveals a kind of love that's not, it's almost like from another planet. It's a marvelous experience of love.
Well,
and it's love involves perfection.
Yeah, no. So if we are, if we are perfect and we're a reflection of the world, then the world is perfect.
As is.
Precisely.
And then from there, what's the next step? I mean, I feel like there's of course, so much more to say. But what is the next step for all of us to take with this kind of philosophy? Where do we pull it all together to really live this? I mean, you've laid out steps and all, but what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there's
a key point there.
Yeah. You have to keep awakening and to realize who you truly are, your real self, the true self, or, you know, who is perfect. And so once, you hit that realization, we go to the collective self. And collective self, all of us can really move mountains. But, we, one by one, we have to get there. And so in unity, in that collectiveness, we can do quite a bit, and we've seen it through history. But, now we really need to awaken to our true self.
And exactly how can we do that? Of course, the whole conversation has been about that, but really, to lead, how do we, by just allowing and seeing ourselves as perfect, right?
Alan, I want to suggest another direction also. There are many directions to this. Other people are welcome differences, cherish differences. Differences are really what it's all about. And so as you come from tolerating differences to accepting them, to appreciating them, to embracing them, you become more and more liberated. So essentially it's kind of welcoming some of the challenges we're facing and really trying to find out, in my case, is trying to find out maybe a little more about Islam. And maybe more of an appreciation of the religion. I'm not a Muslim, but certainly it's incumbent on me to have a deep appreciation.
Mm.
And so we come into welcoming diversity.
Letting go that one way of living and being an observer. When you live from an observer position, you're able to see a much bigger picture. And it's time for us to do that because we live in the planetary age, where the world is coming together, but at the same time, it's falling apart.
Well, I don't know if that's a great note to end on, but I think I would like to pursue this conversation a little more at a further date. Can you tell people how to find you, your websites?
awakenperfection.com, and if people go to contact us, they can send us a note, their questions. And we're always open to comments and people reaching out. So definitely, that's the way.
And about the book, Phil, tell people a little bit about the book.
The book just structurally is several hundred pages. There's a lot of useful information that you don't hear in the radio broadcast, specifically 26 illustrations that Adroni produced that illustrate the concepts so that you can get them in a few seconds. There's actually a list of the illustrations at the back. You can go through, start looking at the pictures, and it's the best way to get into the book. There's also the big section between the history and the mystery, the history and the story and the dream. So we actually do a high level of the human story, very, very meta, very high level of how the great traditions coalesced, starting from the Nile River Valley and the Indus River Valley into east and west, two hemispheres of a global brain. And then we go into the mystery that things are not at all as they appear to be, that nothing is really out there in the normal sense of the word. In other words, quantum physics.
Yes. And what's wonderful about it is that we have a special message in it from Dr. Arun Gandhi, grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, and many great other known figures. So that's, and the book can be found on Amazon and iBooks and Barnes & Noble. So.
And your website, awakenperfection.com.
That is correct.
Well, thank you both for being a guest on New Realities. I've been talking to Adroni and Phil. And again, the website's Awaken Perfection. They can find you there. They can contact you by email, and they can find the book there as well.
Correct. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Phil, for being persistent and really getting this interview on. So thank you both. And I'm going to look at the book, and we'll have a further conversation, okay?
Thank you so much, sir.
All right. Thank you. Okay, that was part one of tonight's show. Part two is with old friend, Peter Sterling, who's a harp player, who's a great harp player, and we're going to talk to him about his story about harp magic. Is Peter on the line? Seth at BBS Radio? Let me just see. We got. Oh, let me. I'll try calling him here. Oh, wait. Let me one show or two is.
Hello.
Okay. Hey, Peter.
Yeah. Let me turn that off.
Okay. Great. Seth, I got Peter on the line there.
Here I am.
Hey, right, Peter. Welcome.
Hey, Alan.
Welcome to New Realities.
Gosh, this is very exciting. Thank you.
It is exciting because let me just explain that Peter and I have been on a journey, parallel paths throughout the last, I would say, 20, 25, 30 years. And I would run into Peter everywhere along the way, New York City, Mount Shasta, Sedona, Maui. And, you know, we each had this avid interest in the emerging spirituality, and I went into this direction of doing interviews and gathering information, and Peter became an amazing harp player and spreading the message through his music. So welcome to New Realities, Peter.
Thank you, Alan. I was thinking about the same thing earlier today, and I was trying to remember where we met, and I had the thought that maybe it was actually one of the earlier times was here in Sedona, I believe. And I kind of have this memory of being at a party and we were hanging out and you started telling me some of your kind of cosmic experiences and I shared mine. And I think we immediately felt a kinship there. And we've had this wonderful friendship and connection that's lasted over the years. So I'm real grateful for it. And I've always wanted to come on your show since you've been doing it, you know, in 2012, right in the
hour
of the quantum leap for humanity. Here we are. We've come together to share in this way with everybody.
It really is the hour, the quantum leap. I mean, me and you, we are veterans of the new age, and we can remember the harmonic convergence when this date 25 years ago was just a kind of speck on the horizon. And and all the turns and twists in the paths that we both have taken have really brought us here in a way much, much more conscious and more expanded than who we were 25 years ago. And I remember us meeting in New York City at, maybe around Carol and Timothy. Uh-huh. Does that make sense?
Well, it could be, yeah, because I was in New York and I was with maybe my friend Nancy Oliphant.
And Kyle, I remember.
Kyle, I've been talking to recently, and he's doing some really interesting things as well. So he's more in your neck of the woods, actually. So,
but I do remember being in Sedona, meeting up with you in Sedona. I think I was there around the time you got your first harp from Annie Williams. Is that right?
Well, that was in the early 90s, and I think you're right. We had met before, and then we met up again at this party, and I do remember sharing stories about John Lilly at this party. And we started talking about the flotation and isolation tank and our connection to John Lilly.
Right, but what it was around that time that you picked up the harp, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, because I had gotten into John Lilly's work just the year or two before. I'd actually heard about him, and then I started reading his works, his books, and discovered about the Samadhi tank and the float tank, and then I started having some tank experiences, and then I had this big opening with the angels that came to me through a lot of my inner journeys, you know, my shamanic journeys.
You know, even though we know each other for so long, of course you've written your book about that, Heart Magic. Yeah. I don't really know so much about these awakenings and these experiences that you had, because I mean, I had a great time in the float tank, but then when I really hooked up with John Lilly and he was doing some of his substances, I didn't have such a great time on those.
I remember you told me about it.
And it wasn't, it was just kind of a shock for me, the awarenesses, the states of consciousness that his favorite drug was vitamin K, and I did have experiences on ecstasy where I did have a third eye awakening. But tell me about your awakenings and your experiences, because I want to know what happened.
Well, you know, I'm speaking a lot about my new book that just recently came out. It's called Hearing the Angels Sing. And it's really chronicles my whole journey since that time we've just been talking about when we met in my early days, even before I started playing the harp and some of the experiences I had. But, you know, that's when it all opened up for me. I was drawn to Sedona in the early, well, late 80s, actually, right after the harmonic convergence. And this whole story is in the book in great detail. So, but, you know, I was drawn here by an inner voice, some sort of spiritual guidance. I knew I was a light worker for many years, and I've been listening to my divine guidance, my inner voice, and this guidance told me that I should go to Sedona. And I had heard about Sedona. This was in the late 80s, right after the harmonic convergence, and I'd heard stories of this spiritual Mecca in the Southwest. So I was always very curious about it, and I decided to take a trip down there. I mean, the first moment I came down Oak Creek Canyon, I was just struck by the beauty and the power of the place, and actually a feeling of familiarity that was very strong. It actually, within a day or so, was like, it felt like home to me, very strong, and I was very, like, compelled by this feeling, and it kind of sucked me in, you know, it being a vortex. I got sucked into it, and I ended up moving here, and within a short time, the guidance spoke to me again and told me that I should release all my material possessions. I'm going on a vision quest. I came here to go on a vision quest. I was actually searching. And I always knew I was a light worker, and I felt something was in me that wanted to come out. I've been doing light work for some time, but some inner something that wanted to come through me. I didn't know what it was, but I felt it. I almost felt pregnant with it. And so I was guided to Sedona. This was my birthing place. And I actually retreated into the canyons, into the solitude and isolation of the backcountry canyons here.
I remember your Volkswagen that you drove around in that you talk about in the book. Yeah, I remember that little Volkswagen camper you had.
Yeah, I was guided to get a camper van so I could be self-sufficient, because spirit was going to be guiding me all over the place, and I needed to be free as the wind to just take off and go here and there on this treasure hunt, on this mythic journey, so to speak, the hero's journey, if you will. And you know, I had read Joseph Campbell, and I was reading Don Juan and Carlos Castaneda at the time. So I was very much into my shamanic journey and gathering power and coming into wisdom and you know, mystical insights and all of this type of thing. But when I retreated into canyons, the thing that really had the biggest impact on me, not only the extraordinary beauty and the geology of the place, but when I would hike back into the way back, I discovered that there was an extraordinary silence in the canyons that I had never experienced before. A palpable silence, almost like you could feel the vibration of the silence. And so I just immersed myself into this kind of deep reservoir pool of this kind of quantum field of silence. And the energy in the canyons, I'm actually talking to you now from Sedona. I just recently relocated back here about a month ago. And spirit spoke to me again and said, it's time to come back for this time of 2012 and all of this. But so I'm talking to you now, I'm looking out of the window of my new home, which is up on a hill, and I have panoramic views of the Sedona Red Rock country. It's quite spectacular. And I'm looking at the western sunset right behind the big Thunder Mountain. So it's really quite a powerful place. I'm sending forth this energy to everybody who's listening here from this sacred vortex area. But real quickly, it was really when I immersed myself in the silence, Alan, I went into this transcendent state that was prolonged over many weeks and months, and had a series of visionary transcendent experiences where really I within the silence, this profound silence that I had never experienced, all of a sudden I started to hear like the faint strains of some sort of music. And the more that I tuned into it, the louder it got. And then it was to the point where I was hearing quite clearly these incredible celestial music, the heavenly music that I had never heard. And it was so breathtaking and so beautiful that it moved me to tears, and my whole body would begin to tremble and shake. When I realized, at first I thought somebody was out there with me with a portable stereo, and they were playing perhaps some classical music out there in the forest. But then I realized, no, I'm tuning into the inner music, you know, that the mystics of all ages have spoken of, the inner music, the inner sound and the inner light. And I was having this illumination of both the inner sound and inner light. Simultaneously, my third eye was opening, my third ear opened up, and I was doing all this kind of incredible rewiring of my neurocircuitry through cosmic, metaphysical, new age practices, and, you know, tuning into the ETs and all these cosmic energies. And I was rewiring myself and working on my chakras and energy body and tuning myself up like a vehicle, because I know that I knew that I needed to raise my vibration as high as possible to go through this initiation, that I was to go deeper into the light. And I went through this whole transformation. But basically, I tuned in the music, and I was taken up in this beautiful heavenly sound out of my body up into the light. And, you know, they say that old saying, Alan, it says, silence is golden. And really, when I got into the silence and just really allowed my mind to become still, you know, and empty, as the Buddhists speak about emptiness, and I went into this great void of emptiness, and it was like being in a bubble almost. It was very unusual. And it was in that kind of void of a bubble and some sort of multidimensional quantum state that I had found myself in all of a sudden. Then I started to hear like in all directions. I got holographic hearing and holographic sight as my inner vision and my inner hearing opened up. And then all these kind of higher faculties of my brain and my mind kind of clicked into gear. I was able to perceive into these other dimensions of light in a higher frequency. Which...
Well, but let me just ask you, how did you know to trust that when maybe other people may have thought they were really losing their mind? I mean, what was it? And then how can you help people understand that difference? I mean, how did you know you weren't losing your mind as opposed to gaining your mind in a way?
I love that you asked that question. I've been thinking a lot about this. A lot of people have been asking me since I was on Coast to Coast the other night. I got a lot of calls, and people called in, you know, wanting to know the difference between...
Yeah, congratulations on that. That is like the major outlet for our light working crew. So I mean, but so what do you think? How did you answer those people?
There were times, Alan, I had to ask myself if I was going crazy when all this was happening. I write about it in my book quite clear, candidly. But I thought I was losing my mind, actually. It was such a very otherworldly, unusual experience back then. And this was also at the time before we had cell phones and personal computers, and the whole planetary grid was, the information network was really in its infancy back then, and nobody really had any of this technology yet. So all I had was an 800 number with a voicemail and a PO box. So I kind of dropped out, and I was living in this, I went into the dream time and just went into an alternate reality of time orientation to allow myself to recalibrate. But when I started meeting these beings, I did think, Alan, that perhaps I was going crazy, that I was going insane. It was that much of a kind of on the edge type of experience. When I first saw the angels, I was like, and perceived them clearly. You know, I heard them first, and they came for me, and they took me up into the light, and I opened my inner vision, and after a moment or two, I began to perceive them around me in my on the inner planes, and then they came into clear vision, and then we linked up, we started communicating telepathically. And they took me on a number of journeys, which I describe in the book.
Let's start there. Okay, what was that first experience with the angels? I mean, what happened when you,
what
the
was
first
the,
time?
Yeah. Well, one of the first time I met them, actually, was, you know, as I talk about in the book, at the time I was living in the canyons, I was also, in, you know, doing a lot of these shamanic journeys back then, which I don't really do like that anymore. That was back when I was a lot younger and free and a lot more fearless. Now I'm much more conservative nowadays. But back then I was on a quest to stretch the bounds of my perception, and I knew I was to pierce the veil and see the ultimate truth and reality of the situation of what we're living in right now. And that was my quest. But the first time I met them, you know, at first I heard them, I started feeling this energy around me. And then it was on my birthday, the first time I saw them, and I was with a couple friends and we were hanging out in Sedona. And as I speak about in the book, some of these ketamine trips that we did, we actually did a group experience that night on my birthday. And
with the ketamine, did you inject the ketamine? Or did you snort? I'm just curious. I mean, if you want to share that experience, because I
about it really quite candidly and frankly in my book. I do disclaim that I use extreme caution when doing these things, and we always did it in a very sacred way. We always said prayers, and we called in protection. We called in, you know, the highest lights and master guides and ascended masters, you know, to watch over us as we were doing this. That's how I've always approached it. It was never really done as a recreational kind of thing for me.
Well, that was the problem when I did it with John Lilly. It's like, boom, and suddenly it was a way large dose, and all I remember was John Lilly's secretary saying to me, "It's very Einsteinian, isn't it?" And there we were, just like kind of like, you know, immovable on his bed there. It's just, but anyway, yeah. I'm glad you had some better experiences with that.
I had really positive experience. I did have some experience that was quite, you know, very intense at times. I did it a number of times. Mm-hmm. It was very clearly guided that I was to have this experience. I actually turned it down on several occasions because I was afraid to do it, and I had a sense that I would change my life forever. And then this whole initiatory process, when I finally decided to do it, kind of came through a connection with the Hopi Indians and going up to the Hopi Indian reservation to make a connection with somebody who had some to give to us. But at first I had to go to the Hopi Kachina dances on the first Mesa, where I was invited with a friend who had connections who set this all up. And we went to where there weren't even any white people allowed. And the first Mesa is like the oldest village in Hoodvilla on the Hopi reservation, and we watched the Kachina dances and went through this whole thing, and then it was given to us. And so it was all very clear that it was part of my shamanic journey. I was being guided, and believe me, I was scared and terrified before I ever launched with vitamin K. And I used great precaution, and I am, especially because the way it administered, you know, it's a liquid and it's injected. It's basically, for the listeners who don't know, it's anesthesia, and it's one of the safest anesthesia available. And
they use it on animals. I know that they called it horse tranquilizer. I mean, originally, that's how I heard it.
Right. Originally, it was used on humans back in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and it's very well tested and very safe and non-toxic. Even at 100 times the dose, people come back, and it's safe, and there's no after effects really. So.
You know, when I just want to tell you, when I was working for John Lilly, I mean, he would love that because he feel like he's floating. Everything is moving and spinning. And he would do that in the isolation tank. He would drip vitamin K or ketamine into himself. And then he'd record his experiences. And I'd listen to some of those old tapes where he said, "My feet are now spinning over my head." I mean, he had some amazing things he would say. And of course, the whole movie Altered States really came out of those experiences of John Lilly and his isolation tank adventures. But getting back to you, I think it can be used for opening parts of our awareness and staying there. So tell me then.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, talking about John Lilly, for our listeners who aren't familiar with him, he was an incredible scientist and researcher, and he worked for the government, I think, in different universities throughout his career. And then he went off on his own and really started studying cetacean intelligence, the dolphins. And that's what the movie Day of the Dolphin, George C. Scott, in the 70s was based on, about trying to communicate with dolphins. And then the other film, as you said, was Altered States with who's the actor? The blonde.
What's that? Heard. What was his name? William Heard?
Yeah, William Hurt, and anyway,
but he discovered he created the isolation tank first, and people said when all your senses are deprived, you fall asleep, and he goes, no, I don't think so. So he created a flotation tank with a high saline solution and a little bit less than body temperature, and it's dark, and you float in this, and just floating in one of those tanks gives you an amazing experience of higher consciousness. At least I've had it. And then someone said to him, why don't you meet some beings that float around all the time? And then he got into the dolphin work in the 60s, where, you know, his work with teaching dolphins how to speak English, which I thought was really not the right track. We have to learn their language. But anyway, getting back to what you were saying.
Because a lot of people don't know this story. Actually, the dolphin thing started in the 50s with him, and he had that research Virgin Islands where he had the dolphin pen on the ocean, on the bottom floor, and the ocean tide would come in to the research facility and it would flood the whole bottom floor, and then he would open up the dolphin pens and the dolphins could swim around the whole bottom floor, and then right above it he had his laboratory and had his samadhi float tank there, and this was in the 1950s, and he was injecting himself every hour on the hour. He did a great, for 2 weeks, he did every hour on the hour, like 20 injections a day for a week or two.
And of ketamine, he did that in the 50s?
Yes, he did it. He did 20 injections a day over a two-week period, and he recorded the whole thing, and it's in his book, The Scientist, or Center of the Cyclone, you can read it. But that's what I read, and I was so captivated by his experiences and how he shared of going with these non-local intelligences and extraterrestrials and going on their ships and communing with the dolphins in space and meeting all these aliens. I was like, wow, that sounds really far out. And so, and then in the future was offered to me, and I was, like I said, afraid to do it. I turned it down on several occasions, but then when it came through an initiation at the Hopi Indian Reservation, I knew, because it was during the time of my vision quest and wanting to discover what was inside of me. So it came to me as an ally and in a shamanic way. And so I realized that. And so I did it in a very sacred way. And it was through those experiences played a very key part in me connecting with the angels, because when I was out of my body, that's how I met the angels, really, in the most dramatic way. I mean, that's how the doors opened for me. Because when you do the K, what happens is when you inject it, you lay back down, and we would do it I did a series not only in the float tank, but on the dry land in a closet in complete darkness, and we put in earplugs and be completely isolated. And I had a girlfriend, and we were facilitating each other and watching over each other as we would do it, because it's anesthesia, so you actually lose body consciousness. It's disassociative. And the trip lasts about 45 minutes, but when it comes on, depending on how much you do, you lose all body consciousness and you leave your body quite effortlessly. And I was able to really master this technique after a series of doing it. And I got quite good at leaving my body with it. And I could go farther and farther out. I started to, you know, the angels eventually came to me, and they took me on a whole series of extraordinary, beautiful and transcendent visionary journeys with them into the angelic realms. They showed me where they lived and into different spheres within the angelic spheres, you know, different worlds.
Well, what did the angels look like when you saw them?
First ones, I had encounters with many angels on the inner planes during this time, but the main ones that I had the most dramatic encounters with and came to work with me quite closely and still do are the cherubs. The little chubby baby ones that we often see depicted in the Renaissance art, you know, painted on the Sistine Chapel. Michelangelo, Leonardo, and all the great Renaissance artists throughout time have painted the cherubs. And, you know, I never was really into angels. I thought maybe they were just kind of a figment of most people's imagination and in kind of folklore and myth and religious imagery, iconography. But when I had this experience and living in the canyons of Sedona and doing the shamanic experiences, when they finally appeared to me and I realized there in front of me, Alan, was a flock of these. See, at first I was when I was taken out of my body. And as I describe on my book, you know, I was transcending time and space. So not only was I kind of going up and down on a vertical axis, like into higher dimensions, like third, fourth, fifth, sixth, perhaps seventh dimension, projecting my consciousness and awareness. But also I was traveling in time because I was remembering past lives, and I was also accessing future lives, my like galactic, kind of extraterrestrial galactic intelligence of myself. So I was, you know, kind of fluctuating in time and space and traversing all these different quadrants and vectors within time and space, so different than our normal third dimensional orientation to time and space. And so it wasn't linear. When I tell the story, actually, it's more sequential. It's non-linear, and it's a hologram, which is quite fascinating. This was when I met the angels, I entered into a holographic quantum field. And this is what the energy I've been working with all these years since connecting with them, and through the music and now through the writing, that it's all holography and it's holographic, and it's a fractal light kind of beautiful matrix of light that comes through in the music and the writing. And it's quite fascinating when people read the book, and there's a CD that comes with it of 70 music. When they work together, I suggest people listen to the music as they read the book, because it creates this kind of a unique frequency and alchemy that opens up the hologram of the angelic realms, and you can actually see it opens your heart, and then it opens your third eye, because the angels have all this love, Alan. And when I met them and got to see them for the first time, it was like, I was like, oh my God, they're real. And I kind of had to blink my eyes. I pulled myself back down into my body, and I had to like shake my head and kind of go, oh my God, like, what was I just seeing? Is that real? And I thought maybe I was fantasizing it, you know, so I tried to just get empty again. And then I went back up the pillar of light out through my body, out through the top of my head, back up into the golden light. And there were the angels again. And as I focused my inner vision, I was surrounded by a flock of these cherubs. I'd say there were, I don't know, 10, 11 or 12 of them, something around me. And they were playing harps and flutes and violins and singing, and this glorious music that I was hearing. All of a sudden, they were around me, and they were playing it. They were part of it. They were showing.
So the music you're playing here is the music you heard on those other realms?
Yes, that's always been my mission, Alan, is to be a channel and an earthly counterpart, a broadcast unit for the heavenly frequencies, the celestial harmonies through the heart.
Well, why don't you play something now, and then we'll, like, you know, for like 2 or 3 minutes, and then we'll keep talking. I mean, we have time. I mean, there's nobody on after me, so they've given me as much time as I want to just talk with you. So let's listen to some of the music.
Let's do. Tell me how. Let me just make an adjustment here. Hold
okay.
on. Okay. And just get a little more light on the subject so I can see. And let me know how this sounds from where you're sitting.
Okay. Oh, that sounds beautiful to me. It really sounds great. Let me ask Seth in the studio, but it sounds pretty good. So.
Is that good?
It sounds great. Really good quality, yes.
Angelic invocation here on the harp from my sky palace here in Sedona, overlooking the valley and the beautiful red rocks and the vortexes here, the angelic power plants. I'll send forth a little bit of this beautiful harp sonics to you and everybody in Radio Land. Thank you.
I can almost feel as if you go into some altered state when you play that music. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. I live in an altered state.
And that's without the other stuff, right?
My life is a constant paranormal experience just about every day. I've opened up the channels so wide for the most part. You know, it's just I'm perceiving multidimensionally constantly, and for me at this stage it's like when I look out at the world in my day and I go about my day and I'm looking and experiencing the reality of my life, I can see the beautiful like fractal patterns of the energy matrix of everything. I can see it in cars and people and plants and animals and the sky and nature, and I'm living in this extraordinary holographic kind of virtual reality. And seeing it as the divine manifestation of the source intelligence.
I had no idea. I mean, I always thought, you know, well, yeah, you were spiritually open, but I really didn't know how far out your, I mean, in that way, your consciousness was. It's great to hear that. And
a lot of people didn't know that about me. Some people did, and I've been a bit kind of in the background, so to speak. I've always kind of shared my insights through my music and at my concerts and my little stories that I would tell. But it's only in the last couple of years where I've really come out and started teaching publicly, really, and teaching and sharing what I know. And it's just my time now. I think it took me, Alan, it took me a good 30 years of kind of inner plane research, spiritual investigation, inquiry, to really feel that I had enough perspective on it all to speak clearly and kind of objectively about these things and not get too wrapped up in it. Because I, at times, as I said earlier, I thought I was losing my mind. At times, maybe I thought maybe I was being possessed by dark spirits. Everything. I went through all of these different levels of awareness about this level of consciousness. But now I feel like I'm in a place where just I've been activated again, and that's why the book is out, and this new technology of my writing infused with the music working together in a kind of a holographic alchemical quantum technology of light and sound. Mm-hmm. The angels work with me, and we've encapsulated in this, and these things, my music has always been a portal to the other worlds, to the angelic realms. And so many letters I've gotten from people all over the world. Many of them I can't even read, many of them I can, and they're on my website of people who start listening to my music, and then all of a sudden they start seeing angels with their eyes open.
Right, Harp Magic is the website.
HarpMagic.com, and people called Hearing the Angels Sing. And in concert with that, my most recent CD, Alan, which came out this past spring, went number one on the international new age radio stations around the world. It was the number one most played music in March of this year.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
Feels like there's really a kind of a convergence happening for me. This is like my lifelong work is coming together now and I'm just sharing what I have right now for everybody. So I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, thank you. Just in a little side note, where are you going to be on December 21st? Because I'm planning a big celebration at Chichen Itza. What are you doing?
Well, Alan, this is the way I love how the universe works. myself and my partner Crystal and my son, we have reservations at the Chichen Itza Lodge for the whole week before and after December 21st. So we will be at Chichen Itza the whole week.
Well, I'm going to invite you to play. It's not finalized, but I've just got connected to some people where they are allowing me to create some kind of day-long festival at Chichen Itza, and I'm looking for people like you, and I'm calling it the Day of Ascension, and I'm glad you'll be there. So we'll talk about it after the show a little bit, but I just had a feeling, you know, since our paths have crossed so much.
Just in the last 24 hours, Alan, what I've really been thinking about, because I've had a lot of invitations to stay here in the States and participate with various events and conferences, but I've had this reservation down there, and I turned down a lot of these things, but I was thinking that I really wanted to play my music during that time, and I didn't have anything lined up, and now maybe a possibility is coming through you. So this is just another way how synchronicity, my book is all about synchronicity and how the angels and these quantum intelligence creates more synchronicity, and you know all about synchronicity and magic, don't you, Alan?
Well, that's how I live day to day. I depend on that for my next move. But no, that just really came. It's coming together this week, and I will talk to you about it. But J.J. Hertog and his group, the Keys of Enoch, will be down there, and I'll be speaking there on the 22nd in Cancun. But on the 21st, you know, they expect, well, hundreds of thousands of people at the Chichen Itza site, and I'm going to be creating an event, and I think you're going to be part of it, which is very exciting.
I know that Dr. Hertak was going to be down there because a friend of mine plays the harp with him as well. I played with him as well, but they were saying that he's going to have maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people with him.
He might. He might have a lot of people down, and they're going to Chichen Itza on the 21st, and then 22nd and 23rd, they'll be in Cancun with their Keys group. What's that?
Link with JJ, and I tell you, singing the holy names with 100 or several hundred or 1,000 people singing the holy names would be one of the most glorious things to do during the ascension of December 21st. I couldn't imagine anything.
At Chichen Itza, the pyramid of Quetzalcoatl, Kukulcan, will be right there. I mean, it is sort of ground zero for the, I don't really call it the end of the Mayan calendar, but it's the end of a cycle and the beginning of a new cycle. So, it's great. It's great to know that you'll be there. That is great.
As a matter of fact, in my book, I have a chapter called Mayan Dreams, and I talk about a whole experience I had at Chichen Itza back in 1986. I was taken down there, a friend of mine, and I traveled down there, and I went through this whole initiation. It's in great detail in my book, but I ended up sneaking into the ruins at the nighttime and went out by myself in the middle of the night in front of the Great Pyramid, and I was guided by these light beings who told me part of my spiritual initiation, shamanic initiation, was to go into the ruins at night by myself, and it was a terrifying experience, but I couldn't take very long, but actually before that, right at sunset, I hit out in the park when they closed it, and then I came out at sunset and walked the old Mayan part with the observatory, and right at sunset as the Pleiades and Orion were coming out in the sky, and it was a beautiful cosmic experience. It's in my book, but it's interesting how, yes, a lot of my understandings about, you know, the time we're living in, Alan, now, and I have no doubt that what we're living through right now and experiencing with the great turn of the ages and the great grand cycles of synchronistic kind of galactic mechanism coming into these states of grand alignment and perfection, which will allow influx and inflow and outflow of cosmic energies throughout all the different harmonic dimensions. There's these, you know, grand alignments that are going to allow an influx of cosmic energy. And I really believe that what we're experiencing is nothing less than a quantum leap for mankind and an evolutionary quantum leap and perhaps a metamorphosis into a whole new kind of genetics for humanity right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think December 21st is a kind of a touchdown point for at least the acknowledgement of our multidimensionality in a public way. It's kind of the unifying of consciousness that we are one. We are one being. We are one species. And I feel that point, that moment, there's an awakening that will be happening. Do you get that sense?
I do. I mean, imagine it. The prophecies speak that at December 21st, 2012, is the birth of the sixth sun in the Mayan calendar. And it's the end of the long count, but it's also the birth of the sixth sun. And it's also the return of Quetzalcoatl or Cuculcán. And many of these depictions of this mythical figure and energy, kind of like a traveling, a winged plumed serpent, kind of like a wormhole, kind of, and has been interpreted in many ways. And imagine, Alan, if we were down at the Great Pyramid in Chichen Itza during the solstice alignment and end of the cycle, one of these galactic portals opened up, and all of a sudden, here comes Quetzalcoatl and Kukulcan flying in their ships or coming through a wormhole portal. Opens up like a lot of these phenomena we've been seeing in the nights, in the skies around the world, like the Norway lights and that kind of thing. Something grand is going to happen, and it's going to, it will be changed in an instant. And we'll I feel like I'm ready to completely walk through that with my brothers and sisters and not look back and go into the light, because I, for one, I'm ready to go to the next level, you know. I'm ready to transcend 3D, and I'm ready to get into the unified quantum field of unity and oneness.
Well, and that's it. I mean, in a way, we're there, but the rest of the civilization needs to come into that awakening. And when we all do, there's like there's sort of like a light that touches all of us that just will, I feel, light up all our consciousnesses, because we need to all come in together in this, or at least the 144,000 of that will make the critical mass, move the morphogenetic field to a greater evolution. That's what it seems to me we're coming towards.
I agree, and I think that, you know, sound and light plays an important role, and we're all learning about vibration and frequency and resonance and harmonics, all of these words, and coming into a deeper understanding of what it means to be embodied in a kind of a DNA crystalline matrix, a liquid crystal matrix in our bodies, and see how we're kind of coming into resonance with new frequencies. Imagine if perhaps there might be a great sound, perhaps these sounds that we're hearing all over the world now, right? That these remarkable eerie sounds that are appearing, people are recording all over the world that sound like something otherworldly, and perhaps a revelatory, something from heaven, like and have been described as the trumpets of the Book of Revelation. Maybe a great cosmic sound is going to come. Maybe the portals will open and we'll hear the higher harmonic tones of the inner planes, and we'll all come into resonance with it, who are focusing on the higher love and higher light, and it'll just take us in. We'll come into resonance of new frequency, and we'll transcend this third dimensional reality completely
and become residents of the new dimensions. Yes. But yeah, no, I feel something like that is happening. And I think that day marks actually an opening of a portal. I mean, which is what you're saying, like a dimensional doorway. And, you know, when I was at Chichen Itza during the spring equinox, you can see the light of the serpent descending, or the blocks of the pyramid form a serpent tail, and the head of the serpent is in stone at the bottom of the pyramid. And at sunset, that tail starts to move down the pyramid into the ground. And when I was there a few years back, it was cloudy, and so you would just see the tail and it would disappear, and every time it would come back it would move a little more. And it was quite a psychedelic experience when the sun set and the light disappeared sort of right into the earth. I felt shifted just by watching that, just by watching that creation the Mayans did hundreds of years ago. But yes?
Oh, yeah. That's an amazing phenomena that they were able to create such a phenomena and a spectacle to observe as the serpent descending down the steps of the pyramid. And then it actually goes across the ground and then goes down into the cenote about 100 yards away. There's a well.
There were too many people there went to see that. But I think, though, the ending of this Mayan calendar and these great archaeological sites, and I think Chichen Itza is probably the best preserved, the most well-preserved of all the ancient Mayan structures. They may have planned something that we may not have suspected in a good way, in a positive, uplifting way.
Well, yeah, I you know, as far as there's a lot of, you know, doom and gloom right now. And actually, if you were to look at the world with just honest kind of scientific, logical, left brain thinking, I mean, the world's in pretty bad shape and so many levels of human endeavor, from, you know, economics to in the environment to politics, everything seems to be reaching some sort of critical mass. Everything, all the world systems are under a lot of stress. Even as we're seeing the electrical power grid in India, the spiritual motherland is coming into the 21st century with all of its, you know, the electrical grid is shutting down. But I feel like, you know, we're being asked to let go of a lot. And no spiritual tradition I know of, or esoteric teaching or mystical teaching or tradition has ever, or any religion has ever said that Earth is our final destination, that we are supposed to perfect ourselves and stay on Earth forever and live like immortals on planet Earth. That's not the goal. I mean, most esoteric and mystical and spiritual and religious teachings say that Earth is only just a kind of a stopping off place, that the real attraction is the heavenly worlds, and that this world is nothing but an illusion. You know, Christ said, be in the world, but not of it. The Hindu Vedas say that, you know, this is nothing but Leela, or an illusion, Maya. It's Maya. It's all an illusion. So I've always kind of seen, you know, through my journey and doing the shamanic work, it's been very clear to me that this world is very illusory. So I've never really invested too much into this world. I've always kind of had my sight on the prize, which is being in a heavenly realm, maybe not necessarily on this planet.
Well, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, I know how I feel, is that I love being on planet Earth. I love the incarnational experience. And I think we have our mind, like you said in, like just a while ago, to travel to these other dimensions. And I think the process of ascension is being able to take the body to the levels and dimensions that the mind has traveled to. And I think then you can raise the frequency of the physical body and come back and forth whenever you decide. So I think it's to have it all, in a sense. I think we, as human beings, with whatever's going on, people call it the ascension, are here to embody the physical and bring those realms into our incarnational experience. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, it does. I think one of the processes of making an ascension is, for me, has been to fully embody in my divine essence in this body. So that's always been my quest, was to make fusion with the beloved within me, like, you know, my higher self, or my I am presence, or my soul. I've always strived to make a connection with that inner spirit. I feel like I've done that to a varying degree. I think most people are kind of haven't fully connected to their I am presence or their higher self and haven't fully embodied that. But I think that's what's happening more and more for people now, is they're getting in touch with their soul and really expressing it in the world and expressing their divinity with one another and reflecting that. And I think that's you got to get in to get out, as Peter Gabriel said in one of his great songs, The Lamb Lies Down on Broadway, that wonderful piece of music. But I always thought that was a great lyric. You've got to get in to get out. And for me, I've really been trying to get in. And actually, now that I have a child who's 1.5 and like a wife and a child, I feel like I'm more in than I've ever been in the human experience here. And it's changed my perspective on the whole thing to some degree.
Yeah, congratulations on your child and your wife, actually. And I think you're right. I mean, I think we have to fully incarnate. We have to fully be embodied if we ever expect to do anything like ascend the body. The only way we can ascend the body is to be fully in it and to feel every cell, every part, every piece, to be totally embodied in the earth form. So then the vibration of spirit can move through all parts of us. If we ignore any part or are too spaced out in a way, we don't appreciate the gift that the earth is giving us.
Mm-hmm.
And the gift of the experience and the gift of music and the sound and vision, all these things that are here to for us is to help us embody and then take the power of this experience to those other realms. So I think that's what you're doing with your music. You're giving people a gift of feeling it, hearing it with their physical ears, and then opening up doorways within their own consciousness to these realms.
Right. And the consciousness, the doorways to the new consciousness is actually in the DNA. The mind, the consciousness, our consciousness is in our every cell in our body. It's in our DNA. And it's like the music that the angels have been bringing through me on the harp, which is the most pure harmonic tone instrument there is known throughout history. There's nothing that sounds like a harp or penetrates really as deeply and purely as a harp can. But it's the tones and the kind of the harmonic patterns and tones and frequencies that I'm channeling through the harp that are specifically designed to awaken and stimulate the DNA, because the harmonic codes of the sound carry information, and they kind of unlock the codes within the DNA and the locks and set free and activate new programs in the DNA, which is the evolutionary programs of the light body, of the angelic kind of higher dimensional light body and the higher consciousness. And so that's, I believe, why my music is so powerful and people have such a dramatic experience with it, is because it does have these, you know, harmonic patterns that can affect consciousness in such a profound way and make it so people can start to vibrate in higher frequencies.
Well, that's what we'll be doing at Chichen Itza. So I'm very excited about that. But getting back to your story, when you first saw the cherubs and you heard the angelic music, I mean, there's one thing about hearing it, and then how do you start to play start to access what you've heard?
Right.
And those are two different things, hearing it and playing it, you know?
Absolutely. And when the angels came to me and I was having these out of body transcendent astral travel celestial journeys with the angels, I was hearing all this glorious music, and then we started to communicate with each other telepathically. I could see them, and they could see me, and they could hear me, and I could hear them. And so we started to share information. When we first got our telepathic link up, Alan, they got very, very excited, and a little celebration broke out because they had been trying to reach me for some time, apparently. Maybe some of it had been with me for a while. But we made this connection, and it was my destiny. And they told me that my work, that my mission, which I had been praying to be revealed to me when I was in the canyons and fasting and practicing yoga for many hours a day and living on the land and spending, you know, hours in the silence doing advanced yogic and tantric practices and martial arts and breathing techniques and advanced kind of cosmic meditation techniques and all this stuff, they told me that my mission was to be a channel for the heavenly music. And they said that the instrument that I was to play was the harp. And at the time, I wasn't really a musician. I had a Native American flute and I had a harmonica and I played them pretty well, but I wasn't, you know, music wasn't a big part of my life. I, like many people, I had always wanted to play an instrument and had tried many, like guitar and different things, but I didn't quite find it. And until the angels came and they said that I was to play the harp. And at first I couldn't believe what I was hearing because I was like 32 and like I said, I wasn't a musician. And they said that I was to play the harp. They were going to work with me. They said they would teach me how to play. If I linked with them and partnered with them, together we would work as a team. And they said they would take care of everything, pull a lot of strings from their side to make sure that the music went out around the world. They said that they would teach me how to play the harp and that together we would bring through a very, very special music specifically designed for this time of the ascension, and that it would have within it, encoded within it, these light frequencies, harmonic patterns of sound and light that would link people to the I Am Presence, to divine love, and into the quantum field of oneness and love, and into the angelic energies, and that people could use the music to meditate with, and that they, if they close their eyes and imagine themselves flying, that the angels would come to them and would take them on fantabulous journeys. And sure enough, this has happened to so many people around the world. I have the letters on my website. You can read them. But that's how it works. It's quite extraordinary.
So when they said they were going to pull some strings, they weren't being funny about that. I mean, I'm kidding. You know, they were, you know, as far as harp playing, they were just going to, they created a doorway for you to deliver this music. So are you channeling all the time? Are you always in touch with them when you're playing your harp?
Yeah, but it's different now. See, at first, when they first taught me, what happened, Alan, was there was one angel in particular that became like my personal harp teacher, angel harp teacher. And this angel would, you know, they told me to just go with my intuition. At first they said, okay, you're supposed to play the harp. And I was like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing. And I said, well, can't I play the guitar instead? And they said, no, you can't play the guitar. You're going to play the harp. And because the harp is such a special instrument and it has the quality and all this. And when I finally said I would do that, within a week I got a harp, and I just took this little harp and I just put my hands to the string and an energy would come over me, Alan. It was this powerful energy. When I would just sit, take a deep breath and relax and just settle in, I would feel this energy around me and I would just put my hands to the string and start strumming, and then this energy would come through and start to kind of take control of my hands, and my hands would start to move on the strings by themselves. I could completely like relax pretty much, and something would take over me. And it was scary. It was powerful. It was terrifying, and it was so powerful that, and so hot and such a high intense energy that I would break out in an intense sweat within moments, and my eyes would start to tear profusely, and my heart was vibrating so much with adrenaline and feeling this higher frequency energy of love. It was an ecstasy vibration. It was like I took five hits of ecstasy at once. It was very intense and very, I had to do a lot of preparation for this to happen, Alan. That's why in my book I talk about all the preparation I did, but that's how I learned this. This one angel actually overshadowed me, and I could feel these kind of psychic impulses coming through, guiding me what to do, like, and animating my hands. And then after a short time, when I learned how to do it, this is kind of how the angels taught me how to play. Then that angel kind of departed, and I was able to, once I got connected enough with my own kind of angelic oversoul and my I Am Presence that's connected in the golden light all the time. There's a circuit that I have now over the years. I connected a circuit that kind of runs up my chakras from my heart, from my higher heart through my higher mind, out the top of my head and into that celestial sphere, the great central sun, where the angels are in residence or in paradise with, you know, in the mansion worlds. And so I have a circuit connection. That's why I'm like a broadcaster. So when I do play at my concerts, I go into prayer first before I take the stage, and I ask that I be a clear channel, and I do a little bit of a clearing on myself, a chakra balancing and alignment. Then I center my energy in my heart, and I go into that inner heart chamber where I feel the flame of the eternal divine love within my soul, in my heart chamber, my sacred heart chamber. And then I get that connection strong, and then I play from that place. And I go into a trance. I really never know what I'm going to play. I never have a song list. I just allow this higher musical intelligence, this heavenly oversoul, like the Holy Spirit, to play through me. And it's every time, it's just amazing. The music ebbs and flows, and it's not like regular music, although I can play cut and dry songs like my CDs. But my favorite thing to do is just to improvise for an audience. And I've done this for thousands of people at a time. And it just allowed the angels to play through and just take a deep breath, put my hands to the strings and let the hands move on the strings. And we all go on a journey together.
Wow. I didn't know that about you. So as the years have gone on and you've gotten more proficient, have you, you've gone deeper into that opening of that channel, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've gotten a lot more comfortable. It's taken a while. I mean, I used to get quite nervous, and I still get butterflies, but it's such a strong energy. You know, when you play the harp, the instrument lays up against your chest and goes all the way up your body, up through your chakras, and the harmonics are so strong, and the vibrations, the actual vibrating instrument, is such a powerful force. And to be able to hold on to one and get it really, really humming is quite a feat, and quite an ecstatic, beautiful, pleasant experience. But many people who see me perform, Alan, see angels around me all the time, because I call on the angels at my performances. And I tell my audiences, I said that, you know, the angels are with us, and they're creating a beautiful mandala, like a beautiful light sculpture. Like the sounds that I'm playing with my audience create patterns. They create etheric patterns in the higher dimensions. But they're right around us, so people that are clairvoyantly open and psychic can see the beautiful colors and the patterns that the music and the angels are creating. And we create these kind of sacred geometrical Merkaba, like patterns around my audience, and we create a group Merkaba, and we travel interdimensionally together. And I, in my performances now, I use multimedia, so I have beautiful like laser lights and imagery of like space and the quantum field and the deep cosmos and light formations and all of this stuff. So I'm really, and I use some, you know, sound effects and things like that. So it's really a full sensory, you know, the angels have always told me to, you know, to work on all the senses, because all of our you know, five main senses are being refined and upgraded, and our seventh senses, six and seven senses, are opening up into the higher octaves of perception. And I use essential oils and diffusers, so, you know, the room smells nice, and you got the colorful lights, and the lighting is beautiful, and the sounds, and it really creates a vehicle.
Wow, beautiful. So it's really multi-sensory. And do you feel like now, are you getting different information at this time? Is it accelerating for you, these experiences?
Yeah. It's a major acceleration right now for me personally, with everything that's going on for me. But, you know, as we said, I've been waiting for this time for 25 years. I met Jose Arguelles in Boulder, Colorado, in 1986, a year before the harmonic convergence.
That's when I met him. I met him in New York when he did his Mayan Factor workshop, 1986. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. I had a dream about him actually recently, and he came to me, and I don't know exactly what he said, but he was there. And then JJ Hertog was in the doorway of this dream, in this dreamscape. So, but anyway, yes, he's the godfather of the 2012 movement, for people who who don't know anything about it, it came from the decipherings of a man named Jose Arguelles, and he first came about it in his book Transformative Vision, and then he wrote The Mind Factor, and then he wrote a bunch of other books. But anyway, in your meetings with Arguelles, what did you learn?
Well, my meeting with him was brief. A friend of mine, Kyle, actually introduced
me. Oh, Kyle, yeah.
Kyle was in Boulder and working with him on the Harmonic Convergence in the International Sacred Sites Festival, which was tied into the Harmonic Convergence in the International Sacred Sites. People all over the world at key PowerPoints and doing ceremony in this kind of wave that encircled the planet. And that was one of the greatest planetary activations we've ever seen. And I've been longing for another one of that level of media coverage and saturation and, you know, harmonic resonance with the planetary light body. Hopefully it looks like, I mean, this makes sense. That was the harmonic convergence. And now that was the beginning of the last 25 year cycle of the 13th Bakhtun of time.
Yes. Right? Yes.
Now we're at the end of that 25 year cycle. What is it? A Khatun? Is it a Khatun? Is it 25 years? Is it a Khatun or something? So here we are. And so the next big planetary activation it's going to be now. Actually, there was one 5 years later, which was the dream spell in 1992, and that was a good one too. But
it wasn't like the harmonic convergence, and I don't think it's going to be. I mean, I was just at Target today, and the guy said, "Well, you know, this I got a new phone." He said, "This will last for a few years, unless the Mayans say it's the end of the world." I mean, this is just a regular guy at a counter, not into any of this stuff, talking about the end of the Mayan calendar. So it's
they're covering the story on prime time. Fox News has done on their 7 o'clock prime time news. My mother called me a couple years ago. She's like, "Peter, turn on Fox News." And actually, you know, she's in her 80s. And sure enough, there it was for 7 minutes. They did a spot on the Mayan calendar and the sunspot cycle and the whole end of the Mayan calendar. And so, you know, it's in the mass media. It's in the mainstream now. It's on every show, Ancient Aliens and all
right,
these.
But as we've been saying, this is a time for a new beginning of a collective consciousness. And we've both been working in our own little corners, really downloading some light energy to add to this time, to show people that this is the beginning of a new era. It's not, yes, it's the end of things. Like you said, things are collapsing, but things have to collapse. The economic system has to change and evolve. Governments have to change. The medical system, the educational system, the religious systems, these are all collapsing because they don't serve an expanding consciousness anymore. So what we're coming into is a new time, and it is the end of the old time, but it's all a very positive thing. And I think the world is much better than it's ever been. That's my feeling.
Yeah. Well, I think we're potent with potential in the world more than we ever have because of our information sharing, and we have access to information like perhaps past cultures didn't have quite the technology of information sharing that we have. They obviously had some way to share information, but my understanding, Alan, that's been made very clear from the angels and some of the other galactic intelligences that I've been accessing lately is that, most humans with our limited perceptual capability and our limited DNA that we're using, because we're only using a small portion of our DNA and also our brain capacity, we're perceiving a very limited, our perceptions are very limited as far as this reality is concerned. I'm going on another tangent.
No, that's okay. That's okay. No, I think talk about some of the beings you've been connecting with. You were saying, you know, some of the levels of consciousness you've been awakening to.
Yes, is that what we're seeing is that what's occurring now on the planet is we're in a cyclical existence. We're incarnated and embodied in cyclical existence through time and space. Time is not linear. Like most third dimensional perspective of time is past, present, future. a linear straight line, that we're traveling somewhere on the time-space continuum on a straight line. But this is a false perception. The reality of the matter is that we are embodied and traveling on a time-space continuum that is a spiral. It's a time spiral, and time moves in the quantum field. It moves in a phi ratio spiral, and it's cyclical. That's why past civilizations have reached this point that we are at now, to some degree. And like, you know, we're discovering that like all these ancient artifacts that are being unearthed now around the world that are pushing the clock back as far as human history to these ancient civilizations that were perhaps, you know, 20 to 30,000 years old. Now we're finding ruins. This is Atlantis. Atlantis was real. And you got to remember, Atlantis was very advanced spiritually and technologically. Yet there was something, some force greater than they could deal with that kind of brought the demise of their civilization and other civilizations before that, is what I've been told. So we, this civilization that we're living in right now is not an eternal civilization. It never was meant to be. That's not how it plays out here on this world. It's not like, you know, we're going to all get Priuses and iPhones and solar panels and get zero point energy. We're going to transform the world and have an eternal civilization on this planet. That's not, the way it's been told to me by the angels is that that's not really the truth, that there's a lot of misperceptions about that. So my sense is, this is what is so fascinating. Real quick, I wanted to share this with you. It's about this perception of time that the galactics have, through my work at the crop circles over the last few years, I've been traveling there the last 3 years and doing a lot of research on the crop circles.
Yeah, me too. That's another path we've crossed together. But go ahead. Tell me what you've got. Yes.
And the crop circles have been communicating quite a bit lately. They're very active right now. But one of the main things that was revealed to me recently was that the reason that the Mayan calendar is such an accurate timepiece, such an accurate kind of quantum computer clock, that because the Mayans, they were working multidimensionally and they understood the quantum field and they understood the way energy moved. And when you look at the and I teach this in my workshops. If people want more information, go to my website, harpmagic.com. And on the homepage, I have a link to the workshops and I describe all of this stuff. But their understanding of time specifically was, and how our DNA is encoded. When you look at this old kin that Jose Arguelles made so popular, and it looks like kind of a rectangular checkerboard of numbers and it makes a pattern. When you look at that and compare that to the chemical sequencing of DNA, it's almost an identical match. Mm. So the study of harmonics, they knew as well, and the phi ratio, the other Mayan calendar is when the other pictorial of it is the two wheels, the wheel within a wheel, like a cog turning, and you have the 13 tones and the 20-day signs, or the 20-day signs and the 20 tones, 13-day signs, one or the other. I think it's the 13 tones and the 20-day signs, and the inner wheel moves on the outer wheel, and they link up, and they go through all these different cycles, but the pattern that inner wheel makes through the calendar as it spins and spirals on the inside is a phi ratio spiral. Uh-huh. And spiral through this kind of time spiral. And that's why I believe that the Mayans understood the spiral nature of time. Just like in the old days before Christopher Columbus, you know, they used to think the world was flat. But then when we discovered it was round, it was a huge paradigm shift. Now our science is starting to, in the quantum physics, is starting to understand time more. And I think the cyclical spiral nature of time is coming in. I think they already know this. This is how you also create, you know, dimensional portals and spaceships.
But what about the crop circles you were saying that you were, how does that hook in with that?
Well, the crop circles are fascinating because they communicate and are teaching us in so many different subjects. They're communicating on everything from quantum physics to biology to genetics to mathematics to harmonics to cellular structure to all sorts of different things. So they're And it's all coming through kind of a quantum communication. It's holographic. All the crop circles are holographic. So all you have to do is really, at the very simplest level, you just look at them and meditate on the design. And just they after about 30 seconds of staring into the center of one, they start to move and pulsate. And then you start to perceive it kind of fourth dimensionally, where it's not just a two-dimensional image, but they're actually spinning, they're moving. They're not, it's like a snapshot of actually a moving hyper toroidal geometrical Merkaba type quantum light structure.
Well, yeah, there was one this year particularly that looked like a hyper tetrahedron that was spinning. Have you seen that one?
See that one. And I've been in one very similar to that, which I believe was made by the same circle makers. You can see there's different styles, and year and again, there's several artists or groups of artists, these galactic artisans who are making these. They leave their kind of signature style. So I'm beginning to see, you know, and some people, to me, it's almost like, okay, that's a Pleiadian one. This is Arcturian, Sirian. Perhaps this is Alpha Centauri. Lineage, and that you can kind of see the different affiliations or artistic styles within the circles.
Actually, you have a whole album dedicated to the circles, don't you? A whole harp album.
I do. Well, about 2 years ago, Alan, I went over there with a group. I led a tour over there, and the last 3 years I've been going, and I always take a small travel harp with me. And crystal bowls we've been using as well, but the main thing is the harp. And I actually do this all over the world at sacred sites all over the world, including the pyramids of Egypt and Machu Picchu and swimming with the dolphins in the Bahamas, all over the place. But this recording of mine is called Circles of Light, and it's an on-location field recording from the middle of a crop circle that's on the cover. I had a group of about 10 people, and we were lying in a star formation. I was facilitating the group. And I was doing a light body DNA activation in a Merkaba-shaped crop circle. This was 2 years ago.
Was this 2010?
At 2010, there was a beautiful Merkaba that had all the inner lines
That's I think I was in that one too. Out the triangular shape one, all the ways out in the fields near the forest there.
Had to walk way, way down a forest road.
Right. I was in that one. That was an amazing one. Yeah, that was like a spinning tetrahedron, that one.
It was a spinning Merkaba. And
yeah.
We were in that, and I recorded there, and also at another one, there was another one that looked like it had kind of five circles. It almost looked like a radiation kind of a thing or cellular structure. It's on the cover of this album, but...
I was there with Fred Rusher from Sedona. You know Fred?
Sure, I know Fred, yeah.
Anyway, when were you there? What month? I'm just curious, in 2010.
July, the last. Instead, I didn't make it this year. I would be there right, you know, late July into early August usually.
Right. So anyway, you were in that one. Yeah, I know exactly the one you were in. And I love that one because on the ground you could not see the curve of the Merkaba. Only from the air could you see that. The line of one of the triangular shapes as they slightly curved to create the illusion of three-dimensionality. But anyway, you were in that one, and what happened? What did you do with the music?
I hold my harp above my head up into the wind, and the wind plays through the strings, and the strings begin to vibrate, and they all make this beautiful harmonic cascade of sound. It's a ultra-high-frequency harmonic a sound bath, and people have had dramatic spontaneous healings within moments of me playing the wind harp over them or against their body. You can see pictures of this on my website if you want to. I have some videos on YouTube of this as well. But that's what I recorded. So Circles of Light is it's a sound transmission. The circle makers and the angels who I work with, we all work kind of in concerts to bring through a harmonic sound, light language. So when you listen to it, it sounds like heavenly choirs, and it's just a gorgeous sound. I could play some for you if you want to hear some.
Yeah, I'd love to hear. So I was going to ask you to play some more.
Bring it up. here.
We still have a little bit more time, but let's play some and we'll talk a little bit and then we'll wrap up. But yeah, I'd love to hear some of that music.
Here it is. So that's the sound of the wind harp.
Wow, that really does take you places. I mean, that really, yeah, I really feel that kind of coming right through me. So
it's so powerful, Alan. People have had dramatic, beautiful healing experiences from listening to this sound, because the angels and the higher intelligence are telling me that because it's an ultra high frequency sound that's very, very rich in harmonic overtones. There's probably, you can hear within that sound, you can hear several levels of harmonic overtones. Like when you ring a crystal, like a very fine Tibetan bowl, sometimes you can get two or three overtones of harmonics. But with this, I'm getting probably four or five, six or seven levels and more, because it goes into infinity, actually, of harmonic overtones. And because those sounds are so piercing and so pure and so brilliant with their harmonics, that they open portals to multi-dimensions. And because it's ultra-high frequency, that it permeates the body and it vibrates out any more dense energy in the energy body or in the cellular structure of the physical body. And the sound will just purge you, and it can clear your energy field, it can heal your chakras, and it can heal even illnesses.
Mm-hmm. Is this what you feel is the ultimate calling for your music, or is there something even more that's coming to you that the music's about?
You mean is the wind harp the ultimate?
No, not the wind harp. Your healing, your transformational qualities I get the feeling there's even more coming to you that's even more transcendent than that. Not with the wind harp, but with all the music you're playing, you know?
The music for me is a journey, and it's an evolutionary experience. I get better at it all the time, and it's getting more and more refined. And my new album, and even the next album that's in the works right now, is probably going to be my most angelic CD, I think, in some ways. So I think what's happening is that the work I'm doing with the angels there, as I'm getting more prepared and the time is advancing and the quickening is increasing in frequency and accelerating, these portals are opening more and more. So I'm actually gaining access more and more to higher dimensional portals through the sound, the higher frequency sound harmonics is opening to me. The more that my nervous system gets grounded and anchored and rooted in these new energies, I can be a better broadcast unit. So I'm celebrating my 20th year doing this work, and I think I'm getting even better at it all the time. So I do believe that, you know, what's going on with me is happening in concert with all of us. I think so many of us are having this unified experience of opening to greater and greater spiritual light and cosmic galactic energies.
Are you still seeing the angelic beings? I mean, even though they're playing through you, are you still having encounters in that way?
Well, I don't have the dramatic encounters so much. Like back in the old days, I used to see them with my eyes open right in front of my face, and I could see their faces and their wings and everything. And that was kind of unnerving. I I was spending so much time in the world that I lost my touch with third dimensional reality, kind of. And so I told them to tone it down, that I know they're there all the time, but I had a lot of work to do. I had to bring through the music. I had to build a record company. I had to build a worldwide distribution network for their music. So I couldn't be airy fairy. I had to really kind of anchor myself and build some real physical structures down here as their earthly counterpart. So in order to fulfill our mission together, but I do see them regularly, and on occasion I'll see an outline of a large angel. I see a lot of sparkling lights around me all the time. I teach people in my workshops how to develop their vision to see angels. It's also in my book. I go over techniques, how to see and feel and work with the angels directly.
Huh. What is that? One of the reasons you moved back to Sedona, because you felt like the energies were stronger there?
Well, you know, when I came here 20 years ago, Alan, was having all these experiences. I was shown a prophetic vision of the future, and I was shown that I would be in Sedona at that time, and that I would witness the coming of the Galactic Federation and the ships of light, and that Sedona was a starport, a galactic portal and starport, and will come here. I was shown a vision, actually, that perhaps a great mothership will dock over Airport Mesa. It won't completely land, but it will dock or hover above Airport Mesa. And Airport Mesa may be a place where, if it gets to a point where many of the channels over the years and possible scenarios have spoken of a mass evacuation, if things get out of hand here on the planet with the polar shift and the environment gets out of balance and things get too crazy and the tribulation or the great purification, which the Hopi and the indigenous culture speak about, if it happens that the Galactic Federation, I've been told for 20, 25 years that they're prepared to assist us in helping, you know, and the ships will come. That's why they're showing up even nowadays, you know, showing the visitation at the opening ceremonies of the Olympics is pretty dramatic. And some people are saying that something could happen even still at the Olympics. So I'm watching that all very closely right now.
Well, I think in Mexico we might get something, you know, and
that's so interesting. You talk about Mexico. So I've been going back and forth. I'm like, should I really go? Should I? Because I have my 1.5-year-old son. He'll be almost 2 years old at that time. And to travel down there with him and Crystal, my partner, or do we want to be in Sedona in our house that's the Sky Palace overlooking the whole scenario here, which would be really cool as well. But now that you're saying you're going to be there with a group and maybe connecting with Dr. J and his group, that's really enticing.
Well, I'd love for you to be there. I'm just putting this event together, which I really want to be a day of ascension, December 21st. I'll talk to you about it this week. I'll call you in the next couple of days about that. But I think it'd be great if you were there and gather a bunch of other like high profile spiritual speakers to be a part of that and have ceremony, have sharing, have talks, have music, of course. There's another woman who's co-sponsoring this with me, who's a great singer. So I'll tell you more about that. And then, of course, if people are interested in their listening, they can always email me at newrealities@earthlink.net. But let's kind of leave people, I mean, besides this music, with really like your path of evolution. I mean, we've been talking about it, but now where are you at now? Like you said, you're opening more and more, but where can we take other people together? I mean, how can it all come together for everyone listening?
Right. Well, I think, you know, one of the best ways that people want to connect in with some of the energy I've been talking and sharing is to go to my website and get either my book or get some of my music, because the music has that unified field within it, and that attracting force, and can really help to bring people into a higher resonance. It's a wonderful tool, you know, just $15 for a CD, and it could really change your life, and it has for many people. So I encourage everybody to consider getting a CD or two. And if you want, the book is a fabulous option because it comes with a CD as well for just a few dollars more. So it's a great thing. But the one main message that the angels, since I've been doing a lot of radio lately and talking to large, big audiences out in radio land, I've been asking the angels, I said, what do you want me to say to them right now?
Yes.
Message. And the message that's been coming through very clearly, Alan, is they want everybody to do the best they can to not be afraid, to not fear, that everything is going to be okay, and that just focus on the light and the love and go into the center of that and into the golden light. And that's really the key to it. And they also said that, you know, if people are wanting to make connection with their angels to access divine guidance, some higher intelligence, some spiritual insight, maybe some direction in their lives spiritually or on any level, the angels are here to help us right now, to lead us to our highest potential, our highest spiritual potential, and to help bring in more light for us and help us to stabilize in the higher frequencies of light so we can make this quantum evolutionary frequency shift. And so they're really here to help, and they want people to know that it's easy to connect with your angels. It's not difficult. They're here to help you, and all you have to do is reach out to them and to speak with them from the language of your own heart and from a very sincere and humble place, and to in order to go to your highest potential, to call out to them and to actually call to them like, angels, come to me, reveal yourself to me, show yourself to me, and speak out loud. And then keep your eyes open and look for synchronicities, look for flashes of light, and they will start to appear to you. They will make themselves known, and they won't do it too abruptly because they don't want you to freak out, close down. But they'll do it gently, and they're very accessible, this energy, for everybody right now. And that's really the main message, that it's not hard to have no fear. We're going into uncertain times, but just know that you are a divine being. You're connected to the light, and to walk in the knowingness of that. And
it's very exciting times. Let me just ask you one final question. How do the ETs fit in with the angelic realms, according to your perceptions?
You know, what they've been communicating to me lately, Alan, is that there's a coming of a galactic light. There's a pulse of light coming from the galactic center, a super wave pulsation of light. They told me this about 3 years ago. I had a powerful shamanic experience where I was out of body, and I actually had contact with a couple of extraterrestrial beings, and they wanted to communicate to me about 2012 and the coming times. And the main information they said is that there's a pulse of light, of high frequency light, galactic light, that's moving, radiating out from the center of the galaxy. It's been traveling for about 24,000 years to get to us. It originated from a great explosion of light at the center of our Milky Way galaxy at the black hole. And this pulsation of light is moving out through the central axis of the galaxy, the ecliptic, and it's traveling at the speed of light, and it's going to arrive in the 2012 window, and it's going to change everything. It's like the final key for us, is what they told me. For all of us that have been working on raising our vibration and making a dimensional shift in consciousness and moving into the new frequency and activating our codes and DNA with all these planetary activations that have been happening over the weeks, months, and years and decades, that we're finally ready for the final key. And the final codes are going to come with this pulse of light that's coming from the galactic center. And so I'm preparing myself for this. And it's really interesting, just a little footnote. And ever since they told me this, you know, they told me that I would get confirmation for this information in many, many ways, which I have. But I did find recently an old interview with Jimi Hendrix. It was with Jimi Hendrix just within months of his passing. And I think it was actually his last interview he ever gave. And he's a very cosmic spiritual guy. And the interviewer asking him about the future of planet Earth. And Jimi Hendrix said that what he believed was going to happen, that an energy was going to come from outer space, and that it was going to change everything. And right. So even he was shown that, and he was a real soul traveler, Jimi Hendrix.
Well, I believe the Mayans saw that, and I think that energy is arriving December 21st, 2012, in the Yucatan, where the Mayans lived. And so join us down there if you're listening. Email me at newrealities.com, newrealities@earthlink.net, to also find out more about that. So, Peter, I that's sort of what I was waiting to hear, that last little piece about that energy coming. And I do feel something like that is true. And I appreciate everything you've shared. Just give people your website and information and your book, Hear the Angels Sing, how to find that. And then we can leave with a little bit of music. So tell people how to find you again.
And just another footnote here, Alan, is yes. I have a photograph from NASA. You know, I was given this information about the galactic pulse about 3 years ago. And that was in 2009 when I had this encounter with these ETs that gave me this information. Then in 2010, NASA published a photograph on their website of an image that came from the Fermi Space Telescope, which is a gamma ray telescope. And what they did is they flew this telescope out to the far reaches of the galaxy beyond the solar system. And they pointed it back actually not beyond the solar system, but way out in the solar system. And then they pointed it towards the center of the galaxy. And this very sensitive device picked up a huge energetic explosion, a remnant of a huge energetic explosion that looks like a huge bulbous energy blast coming out of the top and the bottom of our own Milky Way. So actually NASA now has confirmed what I was told the year before, that there is there has been an explosion at the center of our Milky Way, and scientists at NASA don't even know what this is. They have theories about it, but there's no concrete, definite information about what it is. They're just speculating. Mm. But my belief is that they've actually have a photograph of this galactic pulsation that's moving rapidly towards us at the speed of light, or even, as Dr. JJ would say, superluminal speeds, which is faster than light, and it will arrive. That's what they told me. I wasn't sure it was going to be right on December 21st, but maybe it is.
No, know? I don't know. I just said that to kind of get people excited. But I do think the Mayans were aware of something. And, you know, it's also strange that they just landed on Mars the other day. Did you see all that Mars activity that was happening?
That was yesterday.
The Mars Curiosity rover just touched down, and a whole window of possibility is opening up about our otherworldly existence, of off-planet existence. So something's happening this year, and it's no coincidence that it's all happening now in 2012. And it's a good thing. You know, when they say there's nothing to fear, it's because there's a lot to be excited about right now in this time.
Just think, Alan, right now we have a live webcam sitting on the surface of Mars, broadcasting live images back to planet Earth. Right now, they're receiving high definition images like we've never seen before of the Martian surface. What if they come across an artifact?
And they will. I'm pretty sure there was life on Mars, and there might still be underground. Of course, people like Richard Hoagland have been talking about that for a long time. So I think there was definitely life on Mars. They lost their oceans and their civilization went inside. Well, who knows? That's just a guess. But it seems like why wouldn't there be life on Mars and throughout the universe? I mean, throughout the whole cosmos, any place there are stars and planets, seem like there could be life.
That's part of the prophecies for this time, and the crop circles seem to be communicating that contact is going to happen this year. This is the year of contact for human race. And it's very exciting. I've been waiting a long time, as I know you have. And I'm so looking forward to reconnect with the galactic intelligences, who are only benevolent beings. They're not They're not here. They're not malevolent like that scientist Stephen Hawking has put out a warning.
No, that's ridiculous. I mean, any being at a higher level of consciousness is here because they want us to play at that level. You know, if they wanted to destroy the planet or whatever, people have been watching too many science fictions. Of course, it's the level of consciousness where people are at. They're into war and destruction. I mean, look at the film Prometheus. That could have been a beautiful story of ascension, but instead they made it about these aliens that were killing each other and us and whoever visited it. It's just that is what's going to change. I think people will realize that there's more to life than just the kind of downward spiral. I think the movie Avatar was a great example of that. So we've had people kind of leading the way or giving us little clues about what was possible. And I think we're about to see it for ourselves. So it's very amazing times. It's interesting times.
Truly, truly the sky is the limit. And I feel it's a grand reunion and just such a profound illumination occurring. And I'm so glad that you and I have stayed connected during this final phase of the Mayan calendar. And here we are to have such a wonderful spiritually and intellectually stimulating conversation, I think, about the quantum realities of which are coming into focus for all of us now.
Yeah, no, it's very exciting. I also remember a time we met on the top of Mount Shasta at the cold plunge up there at the Panther Meadows. You remember that moment there?
What a special place.
Yeah, so we've been like these touchstones, along with lots of other people, to the key kind of doorways to other dimensions. And now I feel that weaving this web and we've encoded it into ourselves and now sharing it with others through the music or through this is bringing everyone and up to a level of unity, not just because of what we've done, but because of everything that's happened since the harmonic convergence really has kind of woven a net of a new awareness through the planet, and religions, I think, will transform into this greater awakening, which is not about religion at all. It's about the pure spirituality, the pure spirit of who we are. And that's the time I see coming.
Oh, well, that's a beautiful vision, Alan. I look forward to being a witness to that.
Well, we are witnesses to it now. So if you want to maybe lead us out with, could you tune into that galactic pulse? And this came to me and maybe play or channel some kind of music that will prepare us or connect us with this light coming, because light does carry information, and the information is ready to be received by our brains and our DNA, which is being activated. So it'd be great to hear something like that.
Well, I'm going to just do some harmonic patterns on the heart.
Okay, great.
Okay, and I just wanted to once again invite people to come and see me over at my website, harpmagic.com. And come out and check all the fun stuff over there, all the wonderful light tools and ascension technologies we have at heartmagic.com. So, Alan, it's been a pleasure, and I'll just keep playing. How long should I play?
Oh, just play about maybe 2 or 3 minutes, and I'll say goodbye after that. But thank you, Peter, and I am going to call you this week to give you a little more details about what's coming up on December 21st. So thank you for being a guest, and we'll go out with Peter Sterling on his magic harp. Thank you. Listening to the amazing sounds of Peter Sterling and the Magic Harp, his harpmagic.com website. Thank you, Peter. Thanks for being a guest. I appreciate it. And if you are listening to this program, you can also hear other programs on BBS Radio at newrealities.com. And if you want to email me, you can reach me at newrealities@earthlink.net. And for Peter Sterling can be reached at harpmagic.com. His new book, Hear the Angels Sing. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being a guest tonight, Peter. And I'll be talking to you soon. Good night. Good night.